if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
There was part of me, like the little voice in my gut going, this is not the right path. And then all of a sudden I was at the farmer's market buying oranges and this car came screeching through the market. Now my whole being is all about doing the things that I love.
Producer, writer, and overall empowered creative artist, Jenna Edwards, survived a tragedy that she calls the ultimate overwhelm. As a result, she's now helping other people create the lives they really want. Jenna uses her producing skills to break goals down into small steps through her brand, Create with Jenna. And she's going to be one of the featured speakers at New Media Expo, happening April 13th to 16th in Las Vegas. Jenna, how did your growing up years in Minnesota empower you as a future creative professional?
Ah, good question. I like it. I actually grew up in a very odd circumstance regarding that. I grew up in a really small town where it wasn't a whole lot of creative encouragement, if you will. But my parents actually met playing in a rock band. So I grew up with the knowledge of show business on both sides, if you will, meaning the production side and the booking side and all of the business part of it. And then it was during the 80s and 90s where they had like the huge pyrotechnic shows. So I saw some serious artistry from my parents and the bands that they used to play with and tour with and stuff. So that was kind of my upbringing. And then it really impacted me and helped me to be able to become the person I am today and come out to Los Angeles and understand the whole business part of show business, if you will.
How much fun must that have been, getting to see all that as you were growing up?
It was really fun. It was interesting. You know, I was always like, Mom, can you just bake a cake?
Seriously?
Yes, because, well, you grew up in a town with 2006 people, and you get picked on when your mom shows up in, like, spiky hair and purple eyeshadow out to here and ripped jeans all down, you know, with leggings underneath. And that's just, we didn't fit in. Let's just say that.
When your mom has spiky hair and ripped jeans, how do you rebel as a teenager?
You don't.
Oh, okay.
Because you do the opposite, basically. One of my biggest, how do I say it? Like, one of the biggest blessings of having my mom, particularly as a mom, which she didn't hide anything. And so I got to see all of her mistakes. And I literally grew up, and I tell her this all the time, I'm like, when I was growing up, I did everything opposite of you. And the reason I say that is because my mom was 16 when she had me and 17 when she had my little sister, and she's been married 3 times. And the last one stuck. He's amazing. But it took a long time for her to find her place in the world. And because she was so young when she had me, I got to see it. And so it was really impactful for me. And so I didn't rebel because my mom was the queen of rebellion, and she would know. And she would know. And I was like, I don't want to face the wrath of my mother. So I was a pretty good kid, even though all the parents around town thought that I was not the good kid because of my parents being in a rock band. That was pretty funny. My parents actually went through AA when I was little, and so they were sober the entire time they were in the band. But everyone in town thought it was, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right?
And meanwhile, your parents were probably laughing.
Exactly. We're all like, it's exactly the opposite. But okay. So, you know, my family had this reputation of just, like I just said, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But in reality, it was, you know, hanging out with the band members and their families, having barbecues on the weekends that were completely dry, completely sober. And it was just a really cool kind of juxtaposition. And I've always been an analytical mind. And so I would just sit back and watch and see, you know, the perception of my family versus the reality of my family. And it was always the opposite. And it was really interesting.
That is, I'm hearing Warden June Cleaver, but in rock and roll garb. That's really fun.
Exactly. Exactly.
How'd you first decide to come out to Los Angeles to pursue acting?
Well, I decided when I was 3 years old, after watching Brooke Shields on TV, I'm like, Mom, I want to be on TV. And she's like, yeah, you know. And then obviously being surrounded by it, I think she kind of discouraged it a little, but not in a outward way, if you will, because she knew how hard it was. And she also knew how stubborn I was, so if I set my mind to something, I was going to do it. So since the time I was 3, I'm like, I'm moving to California. And my mom's response was always, California's going to fall in the ocean. And my response was, great, beachside property. Awesome. I'm totally down with that. And I ended up, like, one day, it was so dreary and so awful in Minnesota that I just looked at my now husband and I was like, that's it, this is it, I'm moving. And he was like, okay. And we had just started dating, and we actually got out here the day before our one-year anniversary. So it was pretty cool. Yeah, I just decided that I was going to follow my dreams. I was done not listening to my spirit, if you will.
You listened to your spirit, followed your dream. What happened next for you?
Oh, goodness. Well, I got to live my dream as an actor by being on the last episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is pretty much a dream come true because that show is just so empowering and so awesome. And I was so excited because I inherited her power, even though it was 7 seconds of airtime. But in that 7 seconds, I've had more people come up to me and talk to me about how impactful that small screen time role was, if you will. It's like the epitome of the term, there are no small roles, because it was just a very empowering moment in the history of the show. And so I got to be on the show and it was amazing. And then I was a few months later involved in the Santa Monica Farmers Market crash, which I don't know if you read my bio, right?
I did. 2003, your bio says, and it's interesting because it'll sound like I'm making light of it, and I'm not, but you say something like, if you're on the wrong track, the universe will literally throw a car at you.
Absolutely. I say it all the time. It's so true. And then I make light of it by saying, sometimes it's a roller skate. You have to pay a really, really close attention. But at the time, I had been struggling financially for a few years in Los Angeles as an artist. That's what you do, you know. And I had gotten this opportunity to work at an acting school, and it was full time, and I was making money, and I had convinced myself that I was really happy. And at that job, I wasn't really allowed to like sink my teeth into the business part of film and television, which is something that I now realize I really crave. And so there was part of me, like the little voice in my, you know, gut going, this is not the right path. This is not the right path. And then all of a sudden I was at the farmer's market buying oranges, and this car came screeching through the market, and it hit a table, like a 6-foot table that hit me at 60 miles an hour. And I always say, like, at that moment, it knocked all the joy out of my life, like out of my body. It almost felt like there was a physical, like, knocking of that energy. And I suffered severe post-traumatic stress disorder afterwards, which was something that I thought only soldiers got. So I was in complete denial about it. But I couldn't read. I stuttered when I talked. I forgot basic words. I didn't sleep for 8 months. I ended up in the psych ward so they could regulate my sleep because I was literally losing my mind. And it was definitely one of those situations where, like, you better listen to that inner voice or something tragic is going to happen. Now I feel like it's one of the biggest blessings in my life because I learned so much from it, and my whole being is all about doing the things that I love and doing the things that I know I'm supposed to be doing. And I wouldn't have had the confidence and the strength if I hadn't gone through the years of PTSD.
Tell me briefly about coming through that. How do you get past PTSD when you go through something as horrific as what happened at the Santa Monica Farmers Market?
First, I want to say to those listening who are suffering PTSD, and I am a true believer that it happens to a lot more people than we realize, it doesn't have to be forever. It feels like it's going to be forever when you're in it, but it really doesn't. And if you do the work, which is really hard, you can get through it and be stronger. I always attribute it to, I feel like there's two types of PTSD. One is mine, which happened in an instant, and I can put my finger on it, and it was like, this moment is when I got this. And then there's the other PTSD where, and this is me, I'm not a medical professional, but this is just how I analyze it, where it's from long-term situations, like long-term abuse, long-term, you know, just long-term. And so my comparison is the type of PTSD that I had is like a broken bone, like your bone snaps, right? My brain broke that day. The long-term one is more like osteoporosis. You know, you start to walk a little funny and things aren't correct or aren't the way they used to be, if you will. So with that, it's really challenging when your bone breaks, right? But you go to the doctor and you get it set again, and then you go through therapy and it heals. And a lot of times it heals stronger than it was before. And I really want people who are suffering to hear that. It heals stronger than it was before. For me, I am so much stronger than I was. Mentally, physically, emotionally, I can take on the world is what I feel like. And if you had seen me when I had my PTSD, I was broken. I was like crying constantly for no reason. And I couldn't think and I couldn't, I was broken. It's the best way to describe it. And so for me, it was a lot of denial at first. As I said in the beginning, you know, my parents went through AA when I was really little, not really little, like 9, I would say. And so I knew I had a serious chance of becoming an addict or an alcoholic myself. And so when people wanted to give me medication to regulate the chemicals, I was like, no, I refused. And it nearly killed me. And so once I got out of my denial and had this moment of clarity and slowed things down, I really started to kind of delve into how the brain works, how I work as a person, as an individual, how I operate within my circumstances. One of the biggest things that I did was, on top of the PTSD, I had a lot of people-pleasing tendencies. You know, I mean, growing up as a child of a teen parent, you do a lot of parenting yourselves. And I don't want to discredit my mom for the work she did, but for me, it was a lot of me taking care of. And because that was ingrained in my brain, when I would have a flashback, which would happen up to 3 times a day, it was awful. It was like me on the ground screaming back in the market, and I could hear if someone was around me, I knew they were there, but I couldn't get to them to tell them I was okay and that I just needed to go through it. So one of the things that helped me process, and it's going to sound super counterintuitive, is to just let it happen and learn how to be okay with a flashback, because they happen a lot less if you don't fight them. So that's a big tip. And the other thing was, if someone was around me, because I was a caretaker, I was always worried about them more than I was worried about me, and I didn't want to freak them out if I had a flashback. So I started telling people that were just standing around me, look, if a car comes by and it backfires, chances are I'm going to be on the ground. Don't worry, I'm going to be okay. I'm just telling you this so that you don't have, like, trauma yourself experiencing my, you know, the way my brain is processing loud sounds right now. So telling people about what was going on, not in a, oh, poor me, this is what happened to me type of way, but more in a, I just want to warn you so that I don't have to worry about you. Like, took that pressure off of me, and the flashbacks started to happen less. And so it was just a lot of accepting and slowing down, because when you have PTSD, like for me, like all of your senses are on alert so much. People would touch me and I would burst into tears because it hurt so bad to have just the gentlest touch on my skin, because my nerve endings were so frazzled. And so it was just a lot of like like being kind to yourself and being, you know, intentional with the process. Because, and it took me, by the way, like good year and a half before I wouldn't beat myself up for having a flashback. You know, like you have flashbacks and you're like, God, just get over this. Why are you still in this? This has happened in the past. You know, not realizing that A, the negative self-talk is just making things worse. And B, that you're processing something. It's literally a chemical imbalance in your body. You know, like you can't beat yourself up for that. Like you would never beat yourself up for having cancer, you know? So it's just, it's those types of things. I do have some really great tricks for when you're having a panic attack.
Mm-hmm. Such as?
Like really like helpful. So I was in the hospital and one of the nurses on the floor that I was on was actually a surgical nurse. And she gave me this tip and it was the first time I had heard it. And this was 8 months later, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, why doesn't everybody know this? But basically when you have a panic attack, it feels like someone's stepping on your chest. And the reason that it feels that way is because all the chemicals are built up in there, right? And the chemicals that are built up are coming from the gland right below your jawbone on either side. And so if you ice, I know it's going to sound weird, right? You ice your neck for like 5 to 10 minutes and you just lay down and it'll stop the chemicals from coming in. And then, gross alert, just so everyone's clear, you get something that makes you burp and you burp the chemicals out. Worked like a charm.
Ice and burping. That's great.
Icing and burping. Exactly. You wouldn't think it, but, and I was like, you're crazy, right? I tried it. I told my friends that were having panic attacks. They're like, this is great.
And after the panic attack stopped, you would get further into producing independent films. How'd that happen for you?
Well, I blame my friend Jeremy.
But are you still speaking to him?
Yes, actually, he married my husband and I. But we blame each other every time.
So we forgive Jeremy.
Yes, we do. We love Jeremy. Well, I've always been really organized, and I have the background from my mom, which, by the way, I didn't realize how significant it was until I started producing. And so my friend Jeremy called me up. It was 3.5 years before I could work again. And he, once I started working again, he called me up and he's like, I enrolled in film school. I'm like, good for you. Because I always, first of all, I was determined to be an actor only. And I really love television, right? So I was like, film school, okay, good for you. And he's like, well, you're going to produce my senior thesis. And I had a few choice words for him. And
we probably can't say them here because we're a family show.
No, exactly. And he just kept calling me, you know, because we're friends. And every single time we would talk on the phone, he was like, so are you ready to produce my senior thesis? And again, few choice words. Until 6 months before his senior thesis was to be shot. And I realized he was serious. And I was like, oh, I can't let him down. And so I produced 4 short films in 6 months. And then in order to learn, because I've never gone to film school, you know. And so I was like, I don't want to let him down. And I have no idea how to do this. And so I learned how to do film by doing film. And it was, his shoot was one of my favorite shoots of all time. It was so much fun. It was super organized. We had a blast. And I got the bug. And on one of those 4 short films that I did before his, I met up again because it's such a small town, Los Angeles, and especially if you're in film. I know it sounds weird. It doesn't sound like a small town, right? But it is.
It's like the broadcast industry. That's a small town.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I met up with this woman that I had met a couple of years before, and she was also an actress, and she was like, what are you doing right now? And I'm like, oh, I'm kind of helping out Jeremy. And she's like, do you want to produce a feature? And I was like, sure, why not? And so I ended up producing my first feature with her, and it was called April Showers, and it was a really serendipitous experience. It really was.
Was that the movie based on Columbine?
Yes, written and directed by a survivor of Columbine. And the reason that I did the movie was because the character Jason, just in case everyone's going to watch, because you should, it's a really powerful film. The character Jason was absolutely me. And I was just like, okay, this story needs to be told. There's a reason that this has kind of come into my world, if you will. I truly, after all of the things that I've been through, believe everything happens for a reason. And I'm really aware of being aware of that, if you will. And when I got a script that talked not about the event itself, but the 5 days that followed and how people deal with tragic events like that, I was on board. That was really important to me. My disclaimer is, it is not the feel-good movie of the year. If you're going to watch it, you're going to probably need some Kleenex and be in the right mind space, but it's definitely worth a watch.
What were some of the things that you learned as you taught yourself filmmaking that you really use now?
Well, gosh, that's a really good question. I mean, there's tons of technical things that I learned about producing. I would say that the one thing that I learned that I'm now applying more than ever is the idea of creating the right team. And what I mean by that is that I feel like we humans in general think that things just are the way they are a lot of the time. And with that shoot and the last shoot that I did, Wake Up, which is a great segue, right?
Mm-hmm. Talk show.
Yes, it's a talk show. It's amazing. I'll tell you all about it. I really realized that we have the power to create the team and therefore the culture and the environment within whatever project we're doing. And I've always believed that, but this is the first time that I've these are the two times in the film business, if you will, that I've really experienced it. Because there's a lot of, you know, the term, it's what's on the screen that counts, or it's what's in the box that counts. And to me, it's all about the process now. Because I say I'm having my near-death experience 11 years later. And I truly am intentionally working from that space, meaning I almost died, and I didn't realize it until this year. Like, it didn't sink in that if I survived, A, there was a reason, and B, I don't have to do anything that doesn't make me happy. You know, the world can throw whatever it wants at me, and I now have the tools to handle that. And because of that, I'm going about my producing in a different way. Not only do you have to be qualified to do the job that I want to hire you for, but you also have to have the right attitude. And I realize now as a leader in the community, you know, as a producer, it's your job to create that environment. And I guess I just wasn't owning it before. And it's kind of a travesty on my part, right? Because now I get to bring people together of like minds and give them an environment to not only do their thing professionally, but have fun and enjoy it and get behind it as a culture. It's really, truly the biggest gift, I think, that Jeremy ever gave me.
He certainly did give you a wonderful gift. And I get a real sense of joy from looking at your Facebook page. We've got sunny, bright colors. Create with Jenna has sunflowers all over the place. I get that you are loving your life.
I am loving my life, because why not?
Tell me, please, a little bit more, or a lot more preferably, about Wake Up, your new talk show. How'd that come about for you?
Serendipitous. I have to back up. I would say about 4 years ago, I really realized that producing independent film wasn't my thing. Like, I was miserable. And after all the things that I've gone through, I refuse to be miserable, right?
Exactly.
So I literally threw myself a retirement party so that I could introduce all of my filmmaker friends and let them go create the art that they want to create. But I was like, I'm out. I literally was like, I'm out. I'm not producing anymore. I want to create this brand that encompasses crafting and passion and empowerment and all of these awesome things that I want to put out into the world. And I want to tell my story so that people, you know, would have some hope being with PTSD, especially because it's such an isolating, scary condition to have. And so I went and I retired from film producing, and I went off and I created Create with Jenna, and I just wanted to put love and happiness and joy out into the world. And my whole goal with that is to have my own talk show one day. So in my vision boarding and all of that, I've been like, I'm going to have a talk show. I'm going to have a talk show. I'm going to have a talk show. It's going to be positive. It's going to be positive, right? I didn't say I want to be on that talk show. And so cut to, I went to see a screening of Selma. I don't know if you've seen it. It's so powerful and well done. At the Directors Guild. And on the panel for the Q&A afterwards was Oprah. And I'm not a fangirl, right? Because I grew up in the music industry. And the people that everyone else kind of ooh and ah over were in my backyard. And so, but I do respect and appreciate people who do the things that I want to do and they do them well. And Oprah is absolutely, obviously, the epitome of that, right?
Oprah is an amazing role model.
She's unbelievably awesome. And I can say that now because she's just who she is. And so my friend and I show up an hour and a half early, and I wear my bright yellow sweater, and I'm sitting in the front row at this Q&A because I'm all like, I'm going to wink at Oprah, you know? And she comes in after this powerful movie, and the whole energy in the room shifts to just, I can't even describe the energy, right? And then she goes up on stage, and she's just her. And she's so authentic and so real and just telling us stories and being just awesome, right? And through these stories, I'm listening to her, and I just realize Oprah doesn't pigeonhole herself. She's like, she does the things that she wants to do, whether it's in front of the camera, behind the camera, you know, speaking, writing, whatever it is, she just does what is true to herself, right? And so I went home and I thought about that. And I realized how focused I was on the job instead of the work. I don't know if that makes sense.
That really does, honestly. You know, how focused you are on, we talked about people pleasing before, and in some ways a job is people pleasing as opposed to your work is you.
Right. Exactly. And it was such a powerful shift for me, and I realized all I want to do is empower. Literally from my spirit, all I want to do is empower, whether that's public speaking, being in front of the camera, behind the camera, writing, whatever it is. And so I was literally talking to a friend of mine about it, and I said, I don't even care if I'm in front of the camera. I just want to do a talk show that empowers people. Cut to 2 weeks later, my friend Jen Page calls me up, and she's like, so I'm directing this talk show. Do you want to produce it? It's a very positive one.
Wow.
And I was like, holy, you know what?
Uh-huh. Total goosebumps.
Like, I'm just sitting there and I'm just like, whoa, look what happens when you're aligned with what you're supposed to be doing. It's literally what's going through my head. And it was 6 weeks later that we shot the first 5 episodes of this amazing talk show called Wake Up with these 4 incredibly powerful, super cool, down-to-earth, amazing, like inspiring women as hosts that have all created their lives and are just doing it, you know? And our first guest was Don Miguel Ruiz. Do you know who he is?
The 5 Agreements. 4 Agreements. The 4 Agreements.
Yes. The 4 Agreements is a book that changed my life. And so here's this man who wrote a book, who changed my life, coming into a talk show that I just produced as the first guest. And I totally geeked out and I made him sign my book. And as he was signing the date, I literally lost it. It was that perfect moment of every single, like it was like a flash of every single thing that happened to me leading up to this moment. And the whole rest of the shoot was magic. It was just awesome. And so I'm really excited to share that show with the world.
How blessed are you getting to create magic every day?
It's intentional, though. I do have to say that to everyone listening. If you're intentional about it, it absolutely happens.
And in fact, let's take that a step further. On your Facebook page, you say that you have just really started marketing your brand, Create with Jenna. How do you empower people? Breaking things down step by step, let's illustrate that. Suppose somebody comes to you and they say, Jenna, I have a personal brand. And I want to know how to get that out there and how to accomplish a goal. Let's say that the person that came to you was a musician and they want to get their band out there.
Okay.
Using what you've done with Create with Jenna, how would you tell that person to make their dream a reality?
Okay. So first step is really truly knowing what your goal is and not taking that lightly. You know, there's a lot of people who are like, well, my goal is for everyone to know who I am. Well, you have to be a lot more specific. Who's everyone? You know, who is it that you want to see, like, your brand out there, your band out there in the world that would make you the most happy, right? Because that always works from a place of happiness. Otherwise, why are we doing it? Jack Canfield says, if it ain't fun, don't do it, right? And so I would say, whatever your goal is, you know, I want my band to play for the president, let's say, right? It's a big goal. Then I would say, okay, research the 5 bands that are similar to your band that have played for the president. Then once you have those 5, see if there's any connection, meaning is it through the same management company? Is it through, you know, some sort of university? Whatever it is there a connection? If there's not a connection, then you research all 5 managers of the band. And then you put together a package that, and then we would break down that package separately, because my thing is all about small, tiny steps that you can take every day to achieve your goal. So once you know those managers, you put together a package of your band to pitch to those managers. And then, I mean, I'm just giving you an example. Obviously, this is every single session I do is different because every single person is different. And every single goal may sound the same, but it's almost always completely different. So we would do the break it down sessions that I offer on my website are very specific to you, and we just take teeny tiny steps. And then I check in every time I give you a step and I say, is it too big? And if you say yes, then we break that step down into even smaller pieces. Basically, the goal is to give you a plan with one thing to do a day. Because the idea of overwhelm is, I always say PTSD is the ultimate in overwhelm. Every single sense that you have is overwhelmed. And so through my experience with PTSD, I really, really realized how to break things down to be not overwhelming.
And people can find out more about that on your website?
Yes, createwithjenna.com.
You've just told me in some ways that PTSD was a gift. That's a mind blower. Wow.
Yeah. That whole day changed my life, and all the work that I was able to do and all the teachers that came into my life were, it was a blessing in disguise for sure for me. Tragic, obviously, but a blessing for me.
And by the way, we don't mean to be making light of this. This was a horrific event.
Right.
And a huge hug to anybody experiencing PTSD at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me, please, about the presentation you're going to be doing. You're coming up on something pretty exciting at New Media Expo.
I am. I'm super excited about it. It's going to be an incredible panel with Jen Page, the director that I was talking about, did Wake Up and brought me into that project. I'm so grateful. And we're going to talk about the idea of the internet being this space that allows you to really create the things that you want to create without all of the politics, if you will, that maybe surround film in traditional media in general. And we're probably going to slide a little information in there about how women are natural producers, because we're natural multitaskers for the most part. And that's really what it takes to make a project happen. And I think a lot of females in particular don't understand their power and how they can really take charge and build something amazing. And if they want to make film, it's like a natural fit. And this new media explosion has this incredible, it's this incredible opportunity for people to just really take charge and create whatever they want to create. So it's going to be a great panel.
I love the idea of women as natural producers, because that's absolutely true.
Right? I mean, for the most part, like, we're blanket statement, but for the most part, women are, you know, running the household, running companies, running, they're running, right? which is all a producer does is run the project. So it's really funny because I think a lot of women that get into producing, it comes so naturally that they don't even realize they're doing it.
You know, when you talk about that, it's like, yeah, and I'm thinking of the things that in life you just naturally do. You plan your wedding. You plan what you're going to be doing for your work day. You plan maybe people are coming to the house. You plan a party. What do I have to do when? That's producing.
Exactly. When I first got into film producing, you know, my family's from Minnesota. They don't know. They're like, oh, cool, I watch TV, right? And so they would say, well, what's your job in the film process? And my family's really big. So everybody had a wedding and many, many, many weddings. And so I would say to them, it's like planning 30 weddings in a row. That's my job. One wedding a day.
And you have to deal with all the hysteria and all the craziness and all the things that don't get delivered, et cetera.
Exactly. Exactly.
But I'm getting that you love it.
Oh, I love it.
Before we run out of time here, I would like to ask you about trial and error, because you mentioned that in one of your podcasts and how trial and error was working for you. How would you say is the best way that's worked for you in your creative journey as a filmmaker?
Interesting. I'm trying to think what podcast this was.
I heard you on Create Your Life, and I'm pretty sure that's where I heard that, because I remember you saying something about trial and error. Oh, I know what it was. It was when you talked about New Year's resolutions. Just Jenna.
Oh, it's because my new year is right now. That's funny. I love that you brought that up. So my wedding anniversary was last weekend, and everything for me, and then we shot Wake Up the weekend before, and this is like an ongoing theme in my life, and being March as the time when things actually start to change in the year. It happens every year. So I look at January and February as trial months. So I'll set my goals, and then maybe they'll work, maybe they won't. But by March, I know exactly what I'm doing the rest of the year.
Ooh, I love that.
Isn't that interesting? It happens to me every year, and I don't know why. I just realized it 2 years ago. I was like, hey, this is a trend. Okay, I'm going to use this. So I never claim my new year until March, because I use January and February to just kind of feel it out, you know. And I think that's important, too, is the idea of feel things out. I used to be so stubborn, and I'm a Virgo. And so if I make a decision, like, I'm doing that, right? That's the old me. Now I'm, like, embracing the kind of floopy, as I call it, energy that I have sometimes. It's that creative energy that allows me to bounce from one thing to the other and try it out. And if it's not working, either figure out if I want to keep trying different ways to make it work or just move on. And a lot of times, if I just move on, I'll come back to it in a couple of years. And a friend of mine and I were actually having a conversation yesterday about this. And she had the best, most beautiful description, and I'm going to butcher it. But in essence, it's like people that are creative, that take on a lot of activities and a lot of projects and are passionate about it, are like a multifaceted diamond. And when we moved the diamond into the light, it's like a laser. But we just have to decide at that moment which facet we want to highlight.
I love that description.
Right? But just because we're not highlighting that facet at the time doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
What's been one of the facets that you brought to light in your creative projects that you had had out of the light for a bit?
Ooh. Well, definitely Wake Up. On a personal note, my wedding, which was everything I ever dreamed, and I produced it. I always say I produced my wedding.
Happy anniversary, by the way.
Thank you. We got married on our 15-year anniversary, and the wedding was 3 years in the planning stage. And so when it pulled off without a hitch, I was like, awesome, right? And then some of the projects that have kind of moved into the light and out of the light are the books that I'm writing. And I still haven't finished one, but they're there. You know what I mean? And so I feel like people, like for me, I would always think, oh, you're flaky. And that was the negative self-talk of the creative part of me. And now I'm just like, you're creative. So I changed to the word, and it's been a lot easier for me to then sit down and write when I feel like it, instead of, you know, my brain going, well, you're a failure at this because you didn't finish.
What a difference in perspective.
It's fun. Perspective.
How do you take a creative project to completion? Let's say that you've started that book without getting stuck.
I recommend any project that you take down and you think, where do I want it to go? What do I want to do with this? And I'll use film as an example because it's a big one for me. If somebody comes to me and they say, I have a film, the first question I say is, where do you want it to go? And what I mean by that is, if you want it to go to a theater versus the internet, it's completely different process as far as equipment and budget and crew and writing and all of the things that go into it. So if you've got a project that you really want to do, a book or, like I said, a film or a web series or a podcast, I mean, you know, because your podcast is here, right, coming to fruition, I'm sure you thought, where do I want to distribute this? Who do I want to listen to this? What type of content do I want to put out? And so it's all of these questions that you're going to ask in the beginning of, where do I want it to go? And then you just work backwards, and I recommend writing it down. So I always start with a chart. I want this to go here. And then I think, what are the steps I need to take in order to make it go there? I mean, it sounds simple and I'm making light of it, and it's a long process sometimes, but it's really important to just break everything down and then don't get stuck on the how necessarily, meaning, so I want it to go here. Here's my step. Don't worry about how you're going to complete that step at that time, but just write that step down. I need to find distribution. Great. And then I need to shoot it. Great. I need to cast it. Okay. And then once you're in that step, that's when you break down, okay, I need to distribute it. Where? Right? And then you research. And then once you have the research done, you really make an intentional choice. And that's another thing. People are always saying, well, they don't want my project. They're too big for me, right? Like, oh, William Morris won't call me, or NBC won't distribute it. The thing to remember that I feel like the thing creatives need to remember specifically is they need content as much as you need distribution.
Great point. Absolutely. So definitely to make that call and to contact William Morris or to contact NBC.
Right, and I mean, do it in the proper way with respect to who you're contacting, but don't be afraid to contact. But also, know who you're contacting. I had this one filmmaker come up to me, and he's like, I have this great film. It's just this really great character piece with these two characters sitting in a diner having a conversation. And I'm like, cool. He's like, I just can't understand why Warner Brothers won't pick it up. And I'm like, have you seen a Warner Brothers movie? Like, that's just not how they roll, you know? And that's fine. There's a place for your art. You just have to be aware of where it is.
Great advice for any creative, not just a filmmaker, but musicians, artists, anybody like that out there.
Yeah.
Where will you be going in the future with Create with Jenna? You have Wake Up. You have your brand, Create with Jenna. What's next for you?
Well, I'm kind of in the mode of letting the empowerment come in, you know? I really, really would love to do more public speaking, and so I'm working on that. I would love to finish one of my books, so I'm working on that. And I want to keep creating Wake Up because I feel like it's the perfect talk show for me to do right now. That minute that I decided I wanted to do empowering projects, I just am doing empowering projects, and it's really exciting.
That is. Where can people see Wake Up, and where can they contact you for public speaking?
You can contact me for public speaking at createwithjenna.com or directly at jenna@createwithjenna.com. Wake Up is in the process of negotiating the distribution contract, so stand by. You can like us on Facebook at Wake Up, and you'll get updates that way.
I will definitely put up a link to that.
Thank you.
As we conclude here, Jenna, and thank you for your time, what would you say if people could only get one thing from your experience, from your films, from Create with Jenna, about innovation, creativity, and making a difference, what would you want that to be?
I could sum it up in like one statement, let's see. I would say whatever you're going through right now, if it's difficult, it's not forever. And I would say you can create your life. And I would say the world needs you to create your life.
Jenna, thank you for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You and I have been listening to producer, writer, and speaker Jenna Edwards, founder of the brand Create with Jenna. Jenna is both the producer of the talk show Wake Up and of the upcoming 4th Annual International Academy of Web Television Awards. That's happening in Las Vegas Wednesday evening, April 15th. And if you're in Las Vegas for New Media Expo or NAB, you'll get a chance to hear Jenna on the Women in New Media panel, Tuesday morning, April 14th at 11 in Westgate Conference Room 9. And check out her website, createwithjenna.com. That's createwithjenna.com.
And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.